So we're calling this the Summer of Parables because we're going to be preaching through a whole bunch of Jesus parables. And so last week we introduced that, looked a little bit at what parables are. And so as a quick recap of that, parables are described as just simply short stories. They're short stories that Jesus told, and others too, it was a common teaching method, told in order to illustrate some kind of a truth. In fact, the word parable in Greek, if you break it down, means to throw alongside. So you've got this idea and you throw a story down alongside it to help it make more sense. It also, this explanation I heard this, I found this week was really interesting to me. It teases the mind into active thought. I like that idea. When you listen to a story, you can either just listen to the story and walk away and go, oh, and they all lived happily ever after. That's lovely. Or you can ruminate and the story can stick with you and you can understand that there are deeper meanings. There are levels of meaning in it. The Shrek idea of being like an onion that gets all the layers. There's layers in stories, like there's layers in the Ogre of Shrek. That's a bad parable. Okay, thanks, John. Parables are intended to tease your mind into active thought. So if your hope over these summer months is that you can just sit there and let it wash over you and not engage your brains, I mean, you can do that, but then you miss the whole point of what parables are. Jesus told the parables so his listeners would think about it for themselves. Because when we think about things for ourselves, they stick with us. We remember them. About a third of the things that Jesus said in our Gospels that we have recorded that were remembered are parables. Why? Because people thought about them. They stuck with them. They were easy to remember. So much easier to remember a story than just a string of facts or somebody's lecture. Today, we heard two of three parables that Jesus told, which are essentially a trilogy in the Luke's gospel. The first one is the parable of the lost sheep. And then there's the parable of the lost coin. And then the one we didn't hear is the parable of the lost son, which you probably know better as the parable of the prodigal son. But they're all about something that was lost that was found. It's a trilogy. And it's a trilogy of parables all told in one particular setting. This is the setting. There are tax collectors and sinners. Now, it's funny that he names the tax collectors separately, but tax collectors were horrible. People hated them. Nobody wanted to spend any time with tax collectors or sinners in general. When you spent time with those who were unclean, who were unrighteous, who were unholy, it made you unclean, you unrighteous, you unholy. And these are the people that kept spending time with Jesus, and Jesus kept letting them be with him. You know, one of the things that we say to teenagers often is, you know, look at the five people who are your closest friends. Look at them, and that's who you are. Because we are influenced by the people who are around us. There's a reason why parents want to oversee which friends their children are going to spend the most time with, right? Some of you have had kids who made friends with troubling kids. And you hope that your child would be a good influence. But more, you're likely worried that the other kid will be a bad influence on your child. Some have had their own child be the bad influence on somebody else's children. So you know what it is like to have other parents say, I don't want my child hanging out with yours. Maybe that's just in my family and not in any of your families. But who we spend time with affects who we are. So you have Jesus, a rabbi, a teacher of Israel, a holy man. And the people who keep hanging out with him, the people who keep spending time with him, are the dregs of society. The rich and the poor alike, but all the ones that nobody wanted anything to do with. And people, the Pharisees and the scribes, who are concerned about Jesus' holiness, you shouldn't be spending so much time. You're giving a bad name to all teachers, to all of Jewish leaders and all of that. You need to be separating yourself from them. So this is the setting. Jesus is hanging out with the wrong people, and the right people are grumbling and complaining about it. That's what's going on. And so Jesus tells three stories. He tells the story of the lost sheep. In this story, we have a picture of a shepherd who has a flock of about 100 sheep. That's a pretty average size flock for that time. And one of the sheep goes missing. We don't know why the sheep goes missing. We don't know if it was an older sheep or one of the little lambs. We don't know how it got separated. Probably it was just busy eating grass with its head down, and it didn't notice that the rest of the sheep had gone this way, and it probably looked up at one point from the grass and it went, "Oh, where's everybody else?" if sheep could talk. And then it probably started to walk around. Sheep are not known for their great wisdom and intellect. And so then it probably started to walk around, and it couldn't find the other sheep, and it got lost, and it started going in circles. You know, they say that when you're lost, you should stay put, stay where you are, and someone will find you. I'm guessing this sheep didn't do that. I'm guessing he didn't just stay put where he was. He probably started wandering around, looking, until eventually this sheep gets into trouble. At least, that's not in the story, but that's what we imagine happened. That's what all the pictures have. The sheep is in trouble. Because that's what happens when we wander away, when we're not paying attention. Eventually, we get into trouble. But here's the incredible thing that this story tells us. It tells us that the shepherd went and looked until he found that lost sheep. Now, every parable, a key characteristic of a parable is that it always has a twist or a surprise. We frequently miss that twist or surprise because A, it's not written in our kind of culture, and B, we're so over familiar with these stories that we listen to it and it kind of flows right past. But here's the twist. Here's the surprise. Here's the thing that makes you go, what was that shepherd thinking? He left 99 perfectly healthy sheep out in the wilderness grazing away to go after this one careless little sheep who'd gotten lost, who'd not paid attention to the pack, who'd wandered off, whatever happened. He left 99. He didn't call up one of his shepherd buddies and say, "Hey, could you come and keep an eye on the flock? I gotta go find this troubling one that ran away." He didn't say, "Okay, let me get all of you securely into your paddock so that then I can go find this other one." He just left them. Left them in the wilderness where they were eating. I don't know if they noticed. I wonder if they noticed the shepherd was gone, or I wonder, again, they're sheep, if they just keep their heads down and they're busy chewing on grass. But he left them. He left them where tigers and bears and foxes and coyotes and different things could get to them. Isn't that strange? Imagine what would have happened if he went off, he came back with his one little lamb, and he'd lost 20 from the flock because they all got eaten by something wild. That doesn't make any sense. If you have 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, you say, "Oh, well, at least I only lost one today." But that's not what this shepherd does. This shepherd leaves the 99. I wonder why he left them. I wonder what it was that made him think, "They'll be okay. I gotta go get this one." I wonder if that one was somehow more valuable than those other ones. The story doesn't tell us any of those things. Jesus doesn't tell us any of those things, because parables are meant to tease your mind, to make you think about it, to make you wrestle with it. I could stand here and I could tell you what all my answers to those questions are, what I think was going on. But I want your brains to mull it over for a little bit. And one of the reasons this is a trilogy is because as we hear all three stories, that helps illuminate the first one. Then we hear the others, and they help illuminate each other. And here's the second story. A woman has 10 coins and she loses one. So she rips her house apart, cleaning top to bottom, looking for that one lost coin until she finds it. And this is what she does when she finds it. Like the shepherd, when he found his sheep, he threw a party. This woman, she finds her coin, she throws a party. That seems strange to me. The party probably costs more than the coin was worth. I don't know. She throws a party. What's the surprise or the twist in this story? I think is that she threw a party for one coin that she lost. But again, she had 10. She only lost one. She had 9. What was the big deal? Well, maybe she was very poor. Maybe she needed every single penny that she had, and losing one was a big deal. Some of us know what that feels like. But when she found the one, after searching and searching and searching, she threw a party. When the shepherd found the one, he threw a party. And then there's the story of the lost son. This is a longer story. It's one that can get your mind engaged a little bit more because it has people instead of just sheep or coins. It has animate things as opposed to inanimate things. And the story is simply this. A man has two sons. He has an oldest son and a youngest son. And in Jewish culture, the oldest son is going to inherit the bulk of the estate simply because he's the oldest son. The youngest son will inherit some, but not as much as the oldest. To inherit, your parents have to be dead. That's the way it works. The younger son is a troublemaker, as younger sons can tend to be. The younger son goes to his dad and he says, "I'm sick of slaving away on this farm. I'm just sick and tired of it." I remember once, I'm not going to tell you who, but way back when I was doing youth ministry, kids from one family were aghast to discover that kids from another family had to do chores around their house. And I remember that it wasn't that they were aghast that they had to do chores. They didn't call it that. They said they had to work at their house. They had jobs at their house they had to do. It's home. They didn't even get paid for it. They couldn't believe it. That's kind of what this son was like. "I don't want to work at home. I know it's my family, my house, that I'm supposed to participate. I don't want to anymore. I just want to get all the good things in life. I'm sick of this. And even when my dad finally goes, I'm going to be under my brother's thumb. I'm sick of this. I want my freedom." And so he goes to his father and he says, "Dad, I know you're not dead yet. I kind of wish you were, because then I'd have some money. Could you give me an advance on the estate? Could you give me an advance on my inheritance?" Hugely insulting. What he wants more than his father is money. And the dad gives him the money. And the son goes off. And he lives it up. He's got this whack of cash. And he's feeling good about it. He goes off into the big city where there are malls and dance clubs and bars and restaurants. There's lots and lots of people to hang out with. He's doing the nightlife. He's living up large. He's got so many friends. People always come to you when you have lots of money and you're the one who's willing to buy the drinks. He's living large in the city. But he only has so much money, and eventually he runs out of money. And when he runs out of money, mysteriously, all his friends disappear. And then he has to get a job. The problem is, he doesn't have any skills. The problem is, he doesn't have much of an education. He just was the whiny kid of a fairly wealthy father who left home because he wanted to party. Who's going to hire somebody like that? You know, you're not even sure this person's going to be reliable. You know what this person has been up to. Who's going to hire a person like that? He finally gets a job. It's the worst job imaginable. He gets a job on a pig farm. Now, we don't think that's the worst job imaginable. We have somebody who grew up on a pig farm in this church. They didn't think that was the worst job imaginable, but they're not Jewish. Pigs are like the most unclean animal in Jewish religion that you could possibly come across. To even touch a pig made you so ritually unclean that you not only couldn't enter the temple, couldn't worship God, you probably, if you just died right then and there in the pig pen, you probably weren't assured of going to heaven to be with God because you would be so unclean, stained by the pigs you'd been with. This guy gets a job on a pig farm. He gets a job feeding the pigs. That's his job. He lives, eats, breathes with the pigs. He doesn't even have enough money to feed himself as well as the pigs are feeding. He's probably sneaking bits of the pig's own slop just to keep himself alive. Life has done a big time turnaround on this guy. It's awful. Now, do you see the connection here? This is a longer story. It's a story that has people, so it's a little bit more to connect to. But you see the story here? We have a lost boy compared to a lost sheep who wandered away, got into trouble, a lost coin. I think the sheep probably got lost just simply by just basic carelessness, just didn't pay attention. I think the coin probably was lost by accident, accidentally got knocked off the table and rolled away somewhere. The boy, this young man, was lost by a sheer act of rebellion. All of them were lost, but because of different reasons, different things at play. This boy, this young man, eventually, I picture him always sitting in this pig pen with pigs snuffling around him. He's filthy. I love this picture. He's got one shoe on. He's lost his other shoe somewhere. He's really thin and he's starving and his hair is unkempt. Everything just looks like the worst picture you could imagine. And going, the servants in my father's household had it better than I do. What was I thinking? I thought I could make it on my own, and how did I get here? See, the thing is, when you find yourself in that place, it's not because you saw it coming. It sneaks up on you until one day you open up your eyes and you see that your life has turned to garbage. Even my dad's servants have it better than I do. I think I'm going to try and go home. I think I'm going to go home and maybe my dad will hire me on as a servant. I can't be a son anymore. I blew that. I can't be the son. There's no more inheritance. I blew all of that. There's nothing else for me. Why would my dad hire me as a servant for no reason? But maybe he's forgiven me for my insolence, my rebellion, my rudeness. Maybe he's forgiven me for my betrayal. And maybe he'll let me be a servant. Because that's got to be better than this. And so he picks himself up and he goes home. And here's the surprise in this story. He's still far down the road when his father sees him. Now, what his father should have done is shut all the doors and locked them up tight. This son had abandoned his family. He had shunned his family. He wasn't part of the family anymore. That's what a good Jewish homeowner, father, householder would have done. But not this one. This one is so excited that he sees this son, this ragged creature. I don't even know how he recognized him. He probably didn't look a thing like he did when he left home. I wonder how he recognized him, but somehow he did. And this leader of society goes tearing out of his house, runs down the road to his son. He doesn't even stand there and wait for his son to get to him. He doesn't stand there and wait to hear the, I'm really sorry I screwed up from his son. He makes the first move. He initiates. He leaves the house. He runs down the road until he gets to his son. And before his son can even get a word out, he rehearsed his speech all in his head. He didn't get to say it because his father throws his arms around him, calls him his son, says, this son who I lost has now been found. That's a surprise. We might not think it's a surprise. Those of you who were dads in this congregation might go, well, what else would you do? But in that culture at that time, that was a big surprise. That was a twist that the listeners to this story were not expecting. Self-respecting Jewish men didn't do that. You certainly, if somebody messes with you that bad, they for sure have to repent before you're going to forgive them. They should for sure say, at least, I'm really sorry, before you throw your arms around them and welcome them back in. This dad didn't do that. He just threw his arms around him, welcomed him in, walked him home, called to all the servants, like, kill a goat, kill whatever, we're going to throw a big party, invite all the neighbors, because this son who I love, who was lost, not who messed with me, not who rebelled against me, not who ran away, not who stole his inheritance ahead of time, none of that. This son who I love, who was lost, has come home, come for a party. It's the same story as the lost sheep. It's the same story as the lost coin. Something of incredible worth, whether we think it's of worth or not. Jesus names it as incredible worth. It's lost, it's found, and a party is thrown. This story has an interesting twist that adds to it, because there's an older brother who we haven't heard much about. There's a brother who has spent all those years that the younger son was off living it up. There's an older brother who is sitting at home, working the fields, working the accounts, just working hard, not just his own job, but probably his younger brother's job as well, getting ready to take over the household, to take over the estate, come the day when his father eventually handed it over to him. He had worked hard. He hadn't rebelled. He hadn't spoken down to his father. He hadn't treated his father the way this youngest son did. And the thing is, over the intervening years when this younger son was away, the father came to a place of absolute forgiveness. At some point, he came to the decision that if his son ever showed up again, that he would be welcomed in no uncertain terms. The older son never got to that point. The older son finds out, he's probably out in the field somewhere, he finds out not only has his younger son come home, but his father is killing something of worth on the farm, he's throwing a big party, he's spending all this money that the older son is going, that's coming out of my inheritance, party for this guy. For what? He doesn't deserve it. He hasn't been slaving away. I'm the one who's been good. I'm the one who've done all the things that's expected of me. I'm the one who's followed the rules. I'm the one who's worked hard. Why does he get a party? What does he get a party for? That's one of those big wondering questions. What on earth is the party for? He doesn't deserve it. I wonder all these things about the party itself. I especially wonder the younger son. He walks in, he's got this robe on, he's had a shower, he's had a shave. He walks into this party, all the neighbors, friends, the servants, everybody's there. What was it like, do you think, to be him? What was it like knowing where you had come from? Knowing that just days or weeks before, I don't know how long it took him to get home, he'd been eating with pigs. I wonder if he could look the neighbors in the eye. I wonder what it was like to be the guest of honor at that party. I wonder how much shame he felt. I wonder if that hug and welcome from his father got rid of that shame, or if it took some time before the shame disappeared. My guess is it probably took some time. I wonder how many of the neighbors at the party were standing in the corner going, I can't believe his dad's throwing him a party. I mean, it's nice to come for the free food and the company. The party's great, but I can't believe he's throwing a party. I wonder what the gossip was like. I wonder if the older son was the only one who was bitter and thought this whole thing was wrong, or if there were party guests who felt the same way. We don't know. But this story adds a twist to the other two. And this is why Jesus told a trilogy, because he had more that he wanted us to think about than just simply the lost was found. The older son was also lost. I mean, he was physically present, but he didn't go to the party. He chose not to go to the party. He chose to hold on to his anger, his bitterness, his despising of his younger brother, his jealousy over what this younger brother was getting. Nobody ever threw a big party for this guy. Maybe he should run away too, because maybe then when he came back, he'd get a big party. Somebody would notice that he was actually there. Maybe he should leave because, you know, maybe if I'm gone, people will notice how much work I actually do. Man, have you ever said that? Have you ever thought that, especially in your job, have a bad day at work? And you just think, if I wasn't here, or, oh, if you're a mom or a dad and you stay at home with your kids, how often have you wanted to run away and just see how the home would fall apart if you weren't there? You don't have to tell me. But I know that you think that. My mom used to send us out. There were four of us. I don't know how she did it. My mom used to send us out to play. And I swear, she says I'm wrong, but I swear she locked the door behind us. Only in the summer, not really in the winter. But, like, we weren't allowed to come back in. She had a game she played with us called Store. She had all sorts of leftover candy from Halloween, the candy that nobody liked. And she would give us little coupons that had expired, and we would go shopping at the store, and we could use a coupon to get candy. I don't know why it was fun, because it wasn't the candy we liked to begin with. But to get to the store, we always had to walk like four blocks to get to the store. She did it so that we would leave. That's why she did it. I wonder how often my mom sat there and went, I'm going away on a vacation or to the loony bin. I don't know which it is, but I'm going away and we'll see how well they all get along without me then. I wonder if that's the kind of thing that was going through the older brother's mind. I should leave. How well would this farm run if I wasn't here? I'm the one who's holding it all together. Sometimes as Christians, we do that when people come back to the faith after having been gone for a while and they get celebrated. They maybe come back and they say, I want to be baptized because I want my life to be about Christ now. And people celebrate with them and they applaud them and they want to hear their story. And it's so great. This person has come back to the church. And some of us sometimes sit in the pews and they go, what about me? I've been sitting in this pew for the last 50 years and nobody ever threw me a party for my faithfulness. Maybe I should leave for a while. Maybe they'd miss me then. And maybe when I come back, I'd get noticed. I'd get recognition. I'd get applauded. I'd get a party, whatever it is. I don't think this older brother's reaction is really all that foreign. I think that he was lost. And this is where the stories, the trilogy, take a bit of a serious note. The other two have happily ever after endings. That which was lost was found. There was a big party. That which was lost in this story was found. There was a big party. But we're left with another one who is lost. And we don't know if that one's going to be found. And that, I think, is so much our experience. I know that many of us in this room have people that we love who are lost to Christ, who have walked away. Maybe they just stopped going to church at one time, just like the sheep who just got going about his business and suddenly looked up and discovered they were far away from where they'd begun. Sometimes we get lost by accident. Maybe a kid goes off to university or something, loses touch, people forget to contact that kid, and they just, by accident, they disappear from things. And sometimes it's through rebellion. Whatever it is, people get lost. And what I love, the story of the lost sheep, we're told this. In the story, Jesus says that the shepherd went out and searched for him until he was found. Not the shepherd went in until the sun went down. Not the shepherd went out for a couple days. The shepherd went and searched until he was found. The woman tore apart her house and searched for that coin until it was found. The father, the only way the father was able to see that his son was way down the road coming was because the father was keeping an eye out. All that time that had passed, the father kept his eye out. Maybe he didn't go off into the great beyond looking for his son. I think this is a slightly different story that way. But he kept his eye out, and the moment he caught a glimpse of him, he did, went running down that road to go get his son. That which was lost was found. And the shepherd or the father or the woman never gave up. They hunted and hunted and hunted until they were found. This is great hope for those of us who have people in our lives who are lost. The good shepherd, Jesus Christ, will hunt until they are found. We can rest secure in that.